Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us. Normally, we would always begin our program with the latest on health and nutrition and healing, followed by environmental updates, and then issues, and followed by that with our guest. However, because my guest has other commitments today, we're going to be reversing that. Today, we're going to start with a distinguishing difference between the real economy for most Americans, the hyper-successful economy for those who are, let's say, probably in the neighborhood of 50 to 60 million Americans who don't have to worry about anything, and then what about the poorest of Americans, those who are struggling? And so we're going to deal with that with Professor Michael Hudson. Then from Professor Henry Giroux, America Dystopia, from the Sri Lanka Guardian. I'm going to talk about some social issues and health issues, and also America's oligarchs. Who are they? Who are the people who really have the greatest control over our domestic and foreign policies? And also about poverty. We're going to talk about this today. For example, across the South, many jails are now illegal debtors' prisons. How could this be? Why do we have so many firms out there that are debt collection agencies that feel that they can harass people, take all the money they have in their bank accounts? People are not even aware of this. And then, of course, we'll also have the latest on health and healing. So you see, we have a full lineup, plus I've got some audio clips I'm going to be sharing with you very shortly, and these are some really powerful audio clips that you haven't heard before. So that's what we're going to share today. Let's begin by going to my guest. Dr. Michael Hudson is one of our nation's finest and most important economists. He is a Wall Street financial analyst. In fact, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, who I have a lot of respect for, said of Michael, quote, "He is the world's best economist." Now, he's currently president of the Institute for the Study of Long-Term Economic Trends, and he also was Dennis Kucinich's chief economic policy advisor. He has served as an advisor to the White House, to the State Department, to the Defense Department, at the Hudson Institute, as well as the United Nations Institute. And he is the author of Killing the Host: How Financial Parasites and Debt Bondage Destroy the Global Economy, which goes into great depth in explaining how the polarization of the 1% versus the 99% emerged. His website is michael-hudson.com. Nice to have you with us today, Michael.
It's good to be back with you, Gary.
Michael, I'm going to throw several issues in your direction and take whichever one you wish to address. After watching the Democratic convention, we would be led to believe that it is only through Hillary Clinton and her experience and wisdom that America could regain its position of prominence in the world, that we could have jobs recreated, that we would be addressing civil rights issues, women's rights issues, human rights issues in the most progressive manner. And then I take a look at virtually all of the evidence, and I see it's just the opposite. And I'm wondering, why is it that the mainstream media are not taking a look at Hillary and Bill's combined manifestations when they were in office for 8 years, and hers as a senator and hers as Secretary of State? All you have to do is just look at what has she actually been the architect of. What are the consequences in Libya, the consequences in Syria, the consequences of the State Department and Defense Department, CIA, working to destabilize Russia? What about her coup in Honduras that the State Department supported? What about her and her husband creating the most draconian laws that mainly targeted blacks and minorities. And what about her position on women? I'm looking at all the things that she's done, and they seem to say this is just the opposite of what we're being told. Could you go through these contradictions and try to unravel them and give us some understanding of what a Clinton presidency would most likely manifest?
Well, I think you're right about the contradictions. It was a very strange convention. You remember 8 years ago, Obama was running against really the legacy of George Bush. And when he said hope and change, everybody wanted a hope and change because they worried that the economy was really going down the tubes with the financial crash. But Hillary is exactly the opposite. It's very strange. She says, I'm not going to change everything. You have no hope. I'm going to continue the Obama, the wonderful Obama administration, and you're going to be just more of what you're getting now. Well, I thought, is this crazy? Most 99% of the population still want change. They know that what they're getting now after the last 8 years is no increase in income, an increase in debt, and they're more and more squeezed, and they're less and less able even to borrow the money to get by. So running on a no hope and change opens the whole election to Trump, except she's figured out a way of turning the tables. And at the end of the last 2 days of the convention turned into old-fashioned Republican commie bashing. Remember, Hillary's an old Goldwater girl, and what she was saying was a vote for Trump is a vote for Putin. Here, WikiLeaks had just released, apparently from a whistleblower within the Democratic National Committee, had sent material to WikiLeaks. Immediately, Clinton said, who benefits from all this? It must be Russia, because Trump is the Russian candidate, because he said that Russia didn't invade Crimea, that the Crimeans voluntarily voted for Russia. Well, actually, Trump was right, and that's exactly what happened. So coming out of the convention, you have essentially, we said before on your show, the two most unpopular candidates in America, the most unpopular woman running against the most unpopular man, and each of them realizes that they can win if they can make the campaign all about the other person. So all you heard in the last 2 days of the convention was not about what Hillary had done in Libya, not about her foreign policy that you quite rightly describe as awful. All you heard was Trump, Trump, Trump. Well, Trump's strategy to win should be exactly symmetrical. He should try to always talk about Hillary. And if you have both candidates being as unpopular as they are, then the winning candidate is the one who can make the election all about the other candidate. Well, unfortunately, Trump is even more of a narcissist than Hillary. And so when people talk about, when Hillary talks about him and criticizes him, instead of batting the ball back, he goes on and talks about himself. And you've seen Hillary not only get a post-convention bounce, but you've seen Trump actually fall as people are thinking, wait a minute, he can't keep his mouth shut. He should be talking about the foreign policy. This is the most serious thing in the world. Hillary's already said that there should be a no-fly zone in Syria, that she wants to do to Syria what she did to Libya, which is turn it over to ISIS, because her advisor, Brzezinski, who was Carter's advisor, wrote her a long letter and policy statement outlining what her strategy would be if she's president. And he said, you should try to split off Russia and China by using our allies, ISIS, against their underbelly. And the American policy, according to Brzezinski, and apparently Hillary agrees, is tell Russia, if you don't join us against China, then we're going to push ISIS and terrorism on your southern flank. And they go to China, if you don't support us against Russia and be the first, then you should. Then we're going to try to destabilize your western provinces, break away, and we're going to try to break you up. Well, this is a strategy that probably Hillary's going to follow, and it's a crazy strategy, and it's counter-effective, because Russia and China probably are going to get together and say, wait a minute, we're both threatened by ISIS. Hillary is going to try to have a no-fly zone in Syria, meaning shoot down any Russian planes that attack our ally, ISIS and al-Qaeda and al-Nusra. They're all really the same. Russia will, at that point, Putin has already said, look, this talk about Russian invasion is crazy because we can't afford to have a landed army. In fact, no one can afford to have a landed army today. All we have is the missiles to shoot down your planes and to shoot your bases, and we have atom bombs. And you can see that if Hillary's the president, she's risking Russia and China together saying, okay, we're going to wipe out the funders of the American attack on both of us. We're going to wipe out Saudi Arabia. We're going to wipe out Qatar. And by the way, that's going to increase the price of oil. That will help Russia quite a bit. They've already pretty much indicated what the game plan is. Putin has said, if Hillary does what she threatened to do and puts atomic weapons in Poland right up on our border and puts the missiles on our border, then we're going to react with atomic warfare. There will be no more Europe. And this is really what the stake is. How does Hillary get the issue away from this thing, that this threat of war that should be what the election's all about? Well, all she can do is talk about Trump being mentally unstable, and you've seen her attempts to destabilize him again and again, like with the Afghan family of the person killed in the Iraq War coming out with an attack on Trump at the convention. Well, what Trump should have done is saying, wait a minute, I voted against the Iraq War that their son got killed in. It was Hillary. It's Hillary's war. You should be criticizing Hillary. And instead, he went off the deep end and just got in a personal fight with these people without talking about Hillary. So as long as the discussion is all about Trump and his mental stability, people are just not going to vote. Period. I can't figure out why either party is acting the way they're acting, but you're right, it doesn't make sense.
Okay, I'd like to go through some short answers on the following issues that I believe any one of these could be significant and a detriment to world peace. Hillary and Obama's support of NATO and NATO's positioning itself around Russia, but also NATO was the one that was bombing Libya. NATO is substantially under America's influence. It doesn't do what America doesn't want done. It only does what it's told to do. Tell us about how dangerous is NATO in today's context.
Well, Europe certainly feels that NATO is dangerous. NATO keeps pressing a fictitious view that Russia is about to invade the Baltics and essentially is trying to tell Europe, stop your social program, spend your money on buying American arms to fight this fictitious Russian invasion that's taking place. NATO, you're right, Libya was what has started the whole destabilization of the Near East, because Libya had a vast supply of arms, which Hillary immediately, via Benghazi, channeled into al-Nusra and the al-Qaeda fronts to fight against Syria. Her plan was, okay, let's wipe out the strongest African ruler, which was Gaddafi, who had been building up the country's educational system. Let's destroy the country and turn its arms over to the terrorists, and then steer the terrorists against the Shiites and against Syria. So the result was a huge flow of refugees. NATO immediately, it's now come out in the last few weeks that they've been falsifying a lot of the documents they've been turning over to Europe to make it appear as if Russia was planning an attack. And the result is that what they got was a set of sanctions against Russia over the Ukraine, when it was actually NATO and the U.S. that supported the coup d'etat in Ukraine again and the ethnic cleansing. The sanctions are now causing France, Germany, and Italy to essentially talk for the first time in 50 years or 40 years about whether it's time to withdraw from NATO. So NATO essentially is threatening Europe. Either you escalate the war with Russia, in which case it'll be Russia and Europe fighting each other, let's you and them fight, or finally the overplaying of the American hand is leading, certainly in Germany for the first time in the last few weeks, leading party members of the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats have said maybe it's time to withdraw from NATO. And if we don't withdraw from NATO, we're risking world war.
All right. One of the issues not discussed by the New York Times at all that I could find thus far is in the last 5 years, the United States, in a super secret development with the National Security Agency, the Defense Department, headed by the CIA, where Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were fully aware, they wanted to slow down and sabotage Iran's nuclear program.
Yep.
Even though Iran is a signatory to the nuclear program and has every right to have nuclear, not bombs, but certainly nuclear power, and every single one of their factories, every single one of their laboratories has the International Atomic Energy Commission's cameras, monitors, fail safes, and inspections there, and has shown none of the centrifuges, the thousand centrifuges, being able to do high-grade uranium, which would allow for nuclear bombs, but rather legitimately nuclear energy. They went ahead to try to sabotage this. They were working also with Israel's Mossad. Mm-hmm. And they came up with something absolutely unique, never before done. They created some malware that was so good, yes, that would not give back a signal and would not have a signatory to it and would become a mirror of what they already have. So it would be working with a program in it.
Yep.
But at the same time, if you were in Iran looking at a monitor, you would see normal, even as your centrifuges, one after another, would begin to vibrate, overheat, and burst.
Yep.
So then, when they began to show that, look, we're in compliance, and the president of Iran was taking some journalists through saying, look, we're in compliance. Here's all these inspectors from around the world. We're not doing anything that represents a threat. The American intelligence and Israeli intelligence captured the photograph of all these Iranian scientists, and then they all got they started getting assassinated, cars blown up.
Yep.
So then we thought, okay, we had succeeded. We were blowing up and slowing down their whole program. Now, no one knew what to do except two scientists who are considered the final outpost in American technology. If you've got a problem and you can't figure it out and you've got some malware or worms or viruses, they will find out what it is, where it comes from, and stop it. It took them months. And they finally figured it out. And they said only two places in the world has the technology and the brains to do that, and that is America's National Intelligence Agency and Israel's. They were correct, though it was never acknowledged as such. What no one knew was that that was only half of what was done. The other half was Israel and the Mossad put a separate system in there that no one knew, including the National Security Agency, and this was that at their choosing, all of the electricity in Iran would be turned off and corrupted, so they couldn't reboot anything. That means all telephones, satellites, communications, every refrigerator, freezer, air conditioner, all heart-lung machines, everything in the country would go dark and would not be able to come back. Now, why would a person do that except if they planned an attack and therefore be able to get their planes in, attack what they wanted, and get out? without the what they perceive as the enemy, Iran, being able to fight back. But think of the consequences if you're in one of the hottest places in the world and you have no air conditioning. Think of the food spoilage, think of the hospitals, think of the people who need that. It would be disastrous. Now, then that got discovered. Now, Iran starts what it called its Marshall Plan on finding a solution. Russia got in there. China got in there. Every one of the big players got in there, and they created their own way of stopping this, identifying it, but also, why have a land-based army? Why even have nuclear when you can have cyber warfare? And so now what we created that no one has been critical of, now the blowback is we could end up having, just like with arming a Mujahideen, and I believe it was Jimmy Carter before Ronald Reagan who actually was one of the first people to do this, and his economic advisor, or his security advisor is Brzezinski, the very man you mentioned earlier. What if Russia and China and even Iran, because they got a lot of smart, geeky people there, what if they decided that if there should ever come a time where there is an imminent threat, where they actually, like a Hillary Clinton, who has gone on record saying that she would bomb Iran and she would attack Russia. She said it. And that she's not honoring the China Seas. We're going to go into the China Seas. What if she starts a war, or she allows Israel to start a war? And we know how unstable Netanyahu is and his Knesset, Likud party. What if in return they pushed the button and all of America's electricity went out with maladaptive capacity, so we can't reboot it, turn it back on? You realize at the end of this, within 30 days, 100 nuclear power facilities around the United States would go Fukushima.
You realize
that we would destroy, within a period of 6 months, more than three-quarters of the entire American population would have acute, end-stage radiation poisoning or be dead. We would literally cease to exist as a nation. And no one is talking about this. It's not on anyone's discussion anywhere, and it's the most dangerous thing happening out there. So could you discuss this and the likelihood of this happening if a Hillary Clinton were elected?
Well, actually, it has been discussed, but not in the public press. It's been discussed quite widely among politicians and scientists, because once the Stuxnet, the trick that the U.S. pulled on Iran was discovered, Russia and China and Iran said, okay, we can use this against the United States, and the only way we have of protecting ourselves from it, from our electricity being turned off, is mutually assured destruction. We're putting in exactly the same system to be able to paralyze your electric utilities. Regarding the atomic power plants, I think that most of the American power plants have their own backup generators. So the electricity and the phones would go off for most of America for the people plugged into the electrical grids. But people who have their own generators, whether they're run by oil or something else, would probably work unless the generator's machinery were plugged into an electric socket. That was what happened with in New York with the with a blackout. Everything worked to reboot the system, except the rebooter switch was plugged into the normal electric socket that went out. But presumably they would have solved that right now. But you're right. This escalation of sabotaging an economy by collapsing the electrical system, the phone system, the communication system is a disaster. And Russia already has made it clear, and this is certainly talked about in military circles, that they have the power in Syria at any point to disable the electronics of American fighter planes, to disable the radar, to be able to respond to the kind of attack that Hillary's talking about on Russia. And the Americans don't have that ability to specifically use a Stuxnet-type virus to destabilize the other airplane. So once America and Mossad mounted the attack on Iran, the computer program got into the, let's say, the public domain of government military agencies, and they've taken the lead, in, as far as we know, in militarizing it. So the whole world, you're right, the next war is going to be fought electronically. From the air, not by boots on the ground. And this is the risk that Hillary is putting the country into, and you'd think that this would be what the election would be all about, but there's no anti-war movement. Not even Bernie Sanders tried to make any distinction between his policy, foreign policy, and Hillary's foreign policy. It's amazingly silent. It's as if everybody's given up. What on earth do we do about it? Because we can't do anything about what the National Security Agency is doing.
Michael, I'm going to tie three things together that you are very familiar with. First is from Eric Zeus from Countercurrents, quote, America's oligarchs support Clinton almost unanimously.
Yep.
Quote, the results are already in. Even before the official campaign finance figures will become available after the election, though the large percentage of the people funding the campaign advertising will never be made public due to recent Supreme Court decisions allowing dark money data already exists on the final product of the campaigns, including all of the dark money, which is billions of dollars, which is the booked advertising time for each of the two candidates at the start of their campaigns. And then they go on to talk about whose money is this? These are the oligarchs. Why do they want to back Hillary Clinton? Why in the world would an oligarch back someone who has the power to change how that person earns money?
Well, and even the Koch brothers have announced that they're shifting their backing from the Republican candidate to Hillary. And the answer is that they think that Trump has pretty much killed the Republican Party. And amazingly enough, it's the Koch brothers themselves. By backing the crazy Tea Party movement that's just sort of destroyed the old Republican Party, so they realize there's only one party in America. In the past, it's only been one party for the last half century, but at least it had two halves, the Republican and the Democratic half. Now they've thrown everything behind Hillary, and they're bidding for control. They want to control who she appoints to the Federal Reserve Board, to the Treasury, to the Environmental Protection Agency. They want to dismantle environmental protection, and that's basically her policy by supporting the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which we haven't talked about. That'll make it essentially impossible for governments throughout the world to block environmental pollution, to block bad foods and other things. They want to really dismantle government, and this is the showdown. This election really may be a turning point for the whole century. And the turning point is whether you really get rid of government power, certainly elected government power, and put hands in the power and policymaking in the hands of the oligarchy. And Hillary is able to, on the one hand, say that she's for the people, and she even said the Democratic Party's the party of the working class, whereas her actual policy is just to slam down the working class, and it's the party of the Koch brothers and the oligarchs and George Soros and the other people who've been quite open in saying, you know, we're now backing her, and you can look in the media, and the media are giving a travesty of whatever Donald Trump says. You can see that the whole population is being programmed for an election that is going to pave the way for trade agreements and essentially imposing a corporate state, or what used to be called fascism.
Okay, Michael, this is one of the most important issues that we are not discussing. In fact, we're doing it just the opposite, including the New York Times.
Yep.
Everyone in the Democratic Party is angry at the source of the leaks, like Julian Assange,
yep,
but not the context of it. So,
right.
and that shows you the sellout that Bernie Sanders is. If Bernie Sanders really cared about a new revolution, he would have had a press conference and say, "I cannot, in good faith, align myself with Hillary Clinton. So it was Hillary Clinton and the Democratic platform, and hence the Democratic Party, that chose to illegally, unethically conspire to keep you, my constituents, from having a fair chance at being nominated. Therefore, I am going to run as a third party, maybe joining with Jill Stein, who I'm more in alignment with rather than Gary Johnson. And because the Democratic Party betrayed us, instead he said, join the Democratic Party, support Hillary Clinton, as if these emails didn't happen, as if election fraud didn't happen. But it gets worse. It's real worse with Bernie Sanders, because I'm not happy with Bernie Sanders, what he did. I talked about it. Chris Hedges and I both discussed he was going to sell people out.
Yep.
I want you to listen to this. It's only 3 minutes long, but boy, is it revealing. We should be praising Edward Snowden. We should be praising Karakawa and the other whistleblowers who risked their lives and their career to tell us the truth. Now, what they did is they, in every case, they showed us fraud, corruption within governmental agencies, the National Security Agency, the White House, at the highest levels of government and the media. They showed us the corruption. That's what these millions of emails have been able to show us, the truth. But instead of saying, why don't we look at the context, the message of their statements they've released, instead they were attacked. Listen how they were attacked from President Obama to Bill O'Reilly. That shouldn't surprise anybody. Here's what they had to say.
High-tech terrorists.
Cyber terrorists. Information terrorism.
Shut it down.
We're going to hang you.
You use a drone or something.
A bullet in the brain.
Illegally shoot the son of a...
Information warfare is warfare, and Julian Assange is engaged in warfare. Information terrorism, which leads to people getting killed, is terrorism, and Julian Assange is engaged in terrorism. He should be treated as an enemy combatant. WikiLeaks should be closed down permanently and decisively.
Should the United States do something to stop Mr. Assange?
We're looking at that right now. The Justice Department is taking a look at that.
I would argue that it's closer to being a high-tech terrorist than the Pentagon Papers.
This disclosure is not just an attack on America's foreign policy interests. It is an attack on the international community.
The head of WikiLeaks is not a particularly credible source in my mind. He's a criminal, and he ought to be hunted down and grabbed and put on trial for what he has done here.
I think the man is a high-tech terrorist. He's done enormous.
Assange.
Yeah. He needs to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, and if that becomes a problem, we need to change the law.
Well, I think Assange should be assassinated, actually. I think Obama should put out a contract and maybe use a drone or something.
You don't want to act panicked and have the...
Well, you don't have to act panicked. You can act tough and say, if we catch you, we're going to hang you.
Yeah.
Well, or whatever.
We heard some of that from Holder.
Julian Assange is a cyber terrorist in wartime. He's guilty of sabotage, espionage, crimes against humanity. He should be killed.
How is it that the WikiLeaks guy remains free? You know, back in the old days when men were men and countries were countries, this guy would die of lead poisoning from a bullet in the brain, and nobody would know who put it there.
The way to deal with this is pretty simple. We got special ops forces. I mean, a dead man can't leak stuff. This guy's a traitor, a treasonous, and he has broken every law of the United States. The guy ought to be... And I'm not for the death penalty, so if I'm not for the death penalty, I only want to do it, illegally shoot the son of a...
It's time that the Obama administration treats WikiLeaks for what it is, a terrorist organization whose continued operation threatens our security. Shut it down. Shut it down. It is time to shut down this terrorist organization, this terrorist website, WikiLeaks. Shut it down, Attorney General Holder.
Now, keep in mind, you heard Hillary Clinton, you heard Joe Biden, you heard... The buffoon who smokes the cigars and has a bunch of ultra conservative listeners, Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly. You heard the guy that's always on, that man named Peters who said kill him, and that so-called liberal on Fox. That's an oxymoron. That's like saying Juan Williams is a liberal. You have all these people saying arrest him and kill him because they're terrorists. What did WikiLeaks, what did Julian Assange, what did Edward Snowden do? They merely told us the crimes that had been committed by our government against the people. So exposing a crime against humanity, exposing Hillary Clinton. By the way, how do we know that Hillary Clinton, on 44 separate occasions, with government agencies around the world, promoted the TTP and the TTIP because of WikiLeaks had her emails and the lectures of her statements, we would never have known this. So she could have done what she always does, is saying, I do not support this treaty, when indeed she did. She's the one who then, remember, it was WikiLeaks that told us and proved that she had all of the ambassadors from the United Nations being monitored and their phones. They even wanted to get their DNA. Remember that there was a whole plan for them to get cigarettes or glasses of alcohol so they could then take it through their intelligence agency and find that person's DNA. This is what she did. She pressured governments to take Monsanto's genetically engineered food or there would be economic consequences. These are real. This is not myth. This is the kind of person she is. And yet, instead of the Democrats having enough common sense or reason to understand what kind of person they're actually supporting, and I want to remind the Nation magazine, I want to remind Mother Jones, I just want to remind them that the next time you use that simpleton logic of, well, we got to, you know, and Noam Chomsky, you talk about a disappointment. No, maybe it's time that you take a moment, exhale, and ask yourself, do you really want to hold on to this argument of suggesting people suggested to vote for Hillary Clinton so we didn't get Trump? Noam, did anyone mention the word Jill to you, like Jill Stein? Do you know what would happen if you wanted a real revolution in politics? You have to have a foundation upon which that can be built. And my guest right now, Professor Michael Hudson, is an architect of that and has been in other countries, including China and Iceland and Latvia and all around the world. He goes to help people create a new democratic foundation, knowing it will take years, if not decades, to fully evolve. But you have to start somewhere. If you had voted for Ralph Nader, we would have a movement today. But we didn't, because we wanted a better, more liberal person, more humanitarian person. Well, we wanted John Kerry. Now, take a look at Kerry today and ask yourself, show me a difference between Kerry as a president and George Bush as a president or Obama as a president. So I'm suggesting, Michael, that the New York Times be held accountable for supporting fascism and a totalitarian approach, because they're looking at who leaked the material that exposed the corruption and the fraud of the Democratic National Committee, instead of what was their agenda. And why not then say the entire electoral process is null and void and we have to start over? And instead of doing that, they're trying to put it on Russia. And as you mentioned, there's a new form of red baiting. There's a new form of McCarthyism, and it's from the Democrats and Hillary Clinton. Could you address this, please?
Well, I think you're quite right in what you say, and I'm really glad you're saying it, Gary. The key word you used is leak, as in WikiLeaks. A leak is not the same thing as a foreign power like Russia coming and tapping in to the telephone lines or stealing things. The leak came from, it seems now, according to what Julian Assange said yesterday, the leak came from the Democratic National Committee by people who got copies of these documents and said, this is wrong. So there was someone like Chelsea Manning within the Democratic National Committee, and Hillary's response to say, aha, who benefits from this? It must be Russia. And the way that she kept associating Trump with Putin and Putin with Hitler. So a vote for Trump is a vote for Putin, and a vote for Putin is a vote for Russia, and it's a vote for a new world war. The you also mentioned all of the her mentality of assassinating and getting rid of enemies. She needs a war in order to clamp down and to use all of this oppressive machinery that has been put in place. And I think that at the very beginning of her administration, you'd see military hostility. She won't call it war, but in fact it'll be war. And that can mean that trouble for Chris Hedges, trouble for you, trouble for me. Things really look bad, because that's what the McCarthyite period was. I grew up in the McCarthyite period, and I went to a high school where the teachers every month would turn in reports on what the students said to the FBI. And this is, we were teenagers at the time. People we knew got fired. The Hollywood writers, you know, got fired. But people all down the line, from editors to dentists to all sorts of people, were coming. The McCarthyite period was such an awful period where you have really the whole intelligentsia of a country being being fired and threatened with jail. That is the kind of tactic that is coming back again, this time by Hillary and by the Democrats, not by Joe McCarthy. So you could say that Hillary is the Joe McCarthy of the 2016 election.
Michael, just 2 days ago, I had the opportunity to do a two-hour interview on the Progressive Commentary Hour, which you've been on several times, on the subject of a long-term relationship. It actually started when the two were in school together. She was 13, he was 16, Bill Clinton, and this woman who would later become one of Texas's most respected and honored and scholarly lawyers. And in fact, she was so smart, she got into college. I think at 15 or 16, she was already in college. And anyhow, I said, I do not care about any, I don't want to hear about their sexual relationship or anything salacious. That's irrelevant to me, and it's none of my business. What I do want to know is, what do you know about the true nature of Bill and Hillary Clinton? Keep it on what you can document. For example, I didn't know that she, this lawyer, filed an action against Bill Clinton on a RICO action, and that was won at each level of the state courts, clear up to the Supreme Court, and she won on her motions in the Supreme Court. We didn't know about this. I didn't know, for example, that Bill Clinton, when he was Attorney General, was found guilty, charges brought against him personally, and found guilty for racial discrimination in Arkansas. I didn't know that she said that Bill Clinton would walk around and say those GD ends. You know, and that's how he felt about blacks. I didn't know that Hillary, he didn't call Hillary his wife. He called Hillary the warden, as in a prison warden, and that theirs was purely a relationship of convenience, not anything of love, and that everything was about the power of Hillary. She said Bill was just one of those sex maniac, good old boys, and he went along with anything that allowed him to feel good. But Hillary was different. Hillary took no prisoners. Hillary would vilify people. Hillary would create a whole mini force to go against any of the women that she knew. And by the way, Hillary actually knew that this woman was having this 32-year affair with Bill Clinton. She knew it. She didn't care. She only cared, quote, when he got caught for being stupid, not that what he was doing. But she talked about how Hillary treated everyone in Arkansas, everyone. And she only cared about herself. And she's a pathological personality based upon what this woman saw in her actions. And she said, and that's what you're going to get as president. And if you think that she abused her power and lied and made every deal possible for herself when she was in Arkansas, imagine what she could do as president. And she said, look at all the people she surrounds herself with. Her special economic advisor is from Goldman Sachs. She has one of Monsanto's top advisors on her. She was on the board of directors of Walmart for 6 years. Yep. And you know that Walmart selected that position for her? It wasn't that she was taking someone else's chair. They created that for her. And what did she do when she was the top lawyer for Walmart on its board? She union bashed. Yep. She suppressed the rights of women at Walmart. So how, on the one hand, can you say you're for women, and then you spent years defending the labor practices of Walmart? She was the one who was announcing how Made in America is good at the very time when an investigative reporting team for a television station, I believe it was ABC or CBS, went in and looked, where are these garments Walmart made? And they were made in China or Bangladesh at 14 cents an hour. But here was she saying, oh, but we Made in America. It was a lie. And so that was another example on how she joined forces with the top labor union people who want that connection with power. And around Hillary is about 2,500 highly educated micro-oligarchs. These are highly educated, highly respected, well-credentialed technocrats. They are not in and of themselves articulate enough and charismatic enough to be world leaders, but they're there to support and facilitate those who are. And she said, it's not Hillary you got to be concerned about, Gary. It's the people, the foundations, the think tanks that surround her. And it's no different with Donald Trump. Donald to me is a 14-year-old who stopped his intellectual and emotional growth at that age, when he was led to believe that he was better, brighter, and more privileged than anyone else because he got $200 million from his father. And that's where he stops. You're never going to get any smarter if you're Donald Trump, but you'll make the mistake of bringing people in, and the people who come in to facilitate the policies are from the same think tanks. So it doesn't matter which one gets elected, the power behind the scenes, these are the people who are going to still have the power. So they're still going to bring in the Wall Street people, the pharmaceutical people, the big energy cartels. So when Hillary Clinton says she supports natural resources, well, who was one of her biggest funders? And who was one of her biggest consultants? Ron Emanuel. And where is he from? He is from the largest nuclear power. And where did that come from? From Arkansas. They supported him when they were running for governor. So she believes promoting nuclear and clean coal. Coal is the most polluting, and yet Obama keeps promoting clean coal, which is a complete lie. And she promotes clean coal and nuclear. They don't promote the most powerful and cheapest of all, geothermal, and behind that, wave power. You don't even hear about it. And then when she says that she cares about a living wage, she doesn't care about even a minimum wage. And this is what she's shown throughout her career. Also, this woman told me something interesting about the Clintons. She said they never pick up a tab. They have this idea that everyone else should pay for everything for them. And then you start looking at the deals that she has made when she was Secretary of State. And they are a litany of, in Haiti, 1% of the money raised went to Haiti. The 99% went to people and corporations that donated money to the Clinton Foundation. And the only money went to Carcol, which is the completely opposite end of Haiti, where there was no earthquake, no damage. And they built an industrial park. And guess who the industrial park is for? Corporations that gave money to the Clinton Foundation and big checks to Clinton. In fact, there is a company out of, I believe it's either Norway or Sweden, that gave Bill Clinton $750,000 for a short speech. But right behind that, they were being investigated to see whether or not they should be kept from being able to do business. And right after that speech, the State Department under Hillary Clinton says, we're not going to take sanctions any further with this company. They made hundreds of millions. The same thing in Russia, with one of the people that Bill Clinton went to, Kazakhstan, one of the most corrupt places on the planet, and praised the human rights virtues of the tyrant that runs the country. It's like saying Mao Zedong was really good for the 45 million people that died under Mao Zedong in his own country in just 6 years. And he was praising this complete criminal, but his buddy from Canada got a multi-billion dollar deal. And guess how much money the Clinton Foundation has gotten from this guy? Over $100 million, Clinton Foundation, and now all these lectures. So why is it that the mainstream media is not focusing upon follow the money behind the Clintons and their foundation and who they associate with and how they do business? Final thoughts.
Well, the real question, from what you've said, is why isn't Trump focusing on it? Why doesn't Trump make what you've just said the center of his campaign? So that while Clinton is saying, well, he's unstable, he's a narcissist, why doesn't he package just what you said and make that his stump campaign speech? That's what I don't get. Why can't he talk about her like you talk about her?
I don't know. I don't even want to project, because I believe that no one around Trump has the strength to challenge his narcissism. I believe that he is so hypersensitive that he will make every argument about himself. instead of, he talked about how big his hands are. At the same time, he should have shown us how small his brain is. And I think they're in direct proportion.
Yep, and that's his Achilles heel. You've got it.
And for example, when Hillary Clinton at the National Democratic Convention was talking about gun control and how we need gun control, she allowed over, are you ready for this? Saudi Arabia alone to get over $100 billion in arms. And much of the small arms, the very arms that the regular Americans get their weapons from, she was seeing that hundreds of millions of dollars of those, over $300 million of those, were sold to foreign countries. Now,
it was to Al-Qaeda and ISIS, basically.
Yes.
Ended up with ISIS.
And just last week, when the Russians and the Syrian army liberated al-Nusra, they found in their largest weapon stockpile all American-made arms.
Yep. These were the arms that were given to Saudi Arabia.
So on the one hand, there's gross hypocrisy. You know, there's one guy that was in the British Parliament. His name was Tony Benn, B-E-N-N. Are you familiar with him?
Yes, I am.
Just one of the greatest humanitarian parliamentarians in the history. I mean, he's right up there with Disraeli and some of the others. I don't have any respect for Winston Churchill because he was an avid racist. But Tony Benn, if we only had a Tony Benn in our Congress, I want to play just a few minutes of what Tony Benn had to say about the mistake of putting weapons in the Middle East when everyone was saying, yes, put them in, and he was saying, think before you do this. And we don't have anyone in our Congress saying, why are we continuing to arm the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, and it gets into the hands of the people who then use them against innocents. Listen to this for a moment.
This is an invasion of ministerial responsibility on a matter of public policy. Now, of course, we've discussed so much the conduct of ministers, we've somewhat forgotten that this whole story is part of a very unhappy record of British relations in the Middle East, which my honourable friend is going to raise again on Friday. Iraq was part of the world we took over when the Ottoman Empire disappeared. Britain bombed Iraq with chemical weapons in the 1920s, and a few months ago, the Queen Mother put up a statue to the man who did it. Bomber Harris was the squadron leader who used chemical weapons against Iraq. We planned to occupy Kuwait in 1958, and it all came out with the papers when Selwyn Lloyd wrote to Foster Dulles and said, we might take over Kuwait as a crown colony. And the double standards of British policy in the Middle East is the thing that will be noticed by anyone in the Arab world who reads this debate. We didn't take the view we did about Kuwait when Turkey invaded Cyprus, when the occupied territories were taken over by Israel. This Gulf War, looked at in the light of what we now know, was a war for profit, a war for oil, and a war for the control of the area. And now we are suddenly told that ministers who protested so vigorously about their defense of democracy and human rights were selling weapons to Saddam Hussein, who was repressing Kurds and Shiites before and after the war, and then saying it was just a question of flexible guidelines. 200,000 Iraqis were killed last year by forces, including our own. 150,000 Iraqi babies under five were expected to die by the Harvard medical team that looked at the bombing of the water supply by British, American and French bombers. And it is an act of odious hypocrisy then to come along, as honourable members have said, and say, but of course our industry needs the orders. People want the jobs. You remember the joke about the man producing nuclear weapons in America, and somebody said, how could you do it? And he said, well, a man's got to live, hasn't he? And that is the argument, that somehow you can justify the supply of weapons in that way. The international arms trade is a greater threat to world peace than the AIDS epidemic or the drugs trade, because it's supported by governments. It props up dictators, the Shah, Batista, Marcos, Papadoc, all these people, Pinochet, props them up, and they get the weapons to crush their own people in the interests of keeping down their own people so that the multinationals can make a profit from the superpowers that sell them the weapons. And then, because they bought the weapons, they get into trouble with the IMF, and the IMF comes along and says, cut your social budgets, because you've got to pay the debt on the arms you bought to keep down your own people. And, of course, the waste of skill
Some of the most brilliant scientists and engineers in the world are working on methods of death instead of the means of life. And billions and billions and billions of pounds are wasted on weapons that could have saved lives. And a heavy responsibility rests upon everybody, and I know every government to some extent has done it, who promotes the international arms trade. Because there have been 134 wars since 1945. Millions have died in them, using weapons that were supplied by the superpowers very often. And millions more died because they were denied the resources that were wasted in the arms program itself. Ministers will not tell the House the truth on this matter. Ministers use intelligence, and everybody knows it, we've had a reference to it, and are prepared to sacrifice intelligent people to conceal the truth. This is a matter the House should deal with by select committee. Look at Oliver North. They had him up before a congressional committee and they grilled him for weeks on it, on Watergate. When Peter Wright wrote a book saying he'd committed treason, they spent millions of pounds trying to prevent the book getting into the hands of the British people. Because the central question is, who is allowed to buy the weapons? Who controls it? Who knows what happens? Who tells
okay,
the
now
truth?
That's finally, that's Tony Benn. And my final thought on this is, here the Democrats, who are supposed to represent peace, the people, the poor, and those who are underserved, are, through Hillary and Bill Clinton, selling anything and everything they can in the way of weapons systems, irrespective of who ultimately ends up using them and against whom, and having friends like Kagame, who was the mastermind behind the one of the greatest genocides since the Second World War in a 90-day period. Over 900,000 Rwandans were killed, and maybe mainly the Tutsi by the Hutu, and that was their supporter. Now Bill Clinton gives Kagame, the head of that country, a human rights award. In return, they open up their country for Bill Clinton's friends to exploit the natural resources. Is there a point to where you simply say the liberal community is dead, the Democratic community is dead, the Republican conservative communities are dead, tone deaf and dead to anything that is ethical, moral, and responsible, and we must turn to a whole new paradigm? Your final thoughts.
I think it's come to that point. Already during the Vietnam War, people were saying, whenever a Democrat runs for president, you should ask, where are they going to go to war? Because every Democratic president has started a war somewhere. That is their policy, largely because one of their major backers is the military-industrial complex. So that's true. I think that we've come to a point where you should the labor unions and the left has to give up the fantasy that somehow you can infiltrate the Democratic Party and turn it into a labor party, to turn it into a Roosevelt-like reform party. 50 years of attempts have all failed, and as you pointed out earlier, the party's controlled by the oligarchs, by the George Soroses, and now the Koch brothers. There needs to be another party for real socialism that Bernie Sanders is talking about. You're not going to have the Democratic Party as a socialist party. It's the oligarchic party. That means you need something else.
We hope that Jill Stein is supported by those who see the truth in what is wrong with the establishment parties and support her, and therefore a whole new movement forwards. Michael, thank you very much for being with us today. Dr. Michael Hudson, and as Paul Craig Roberts says, the world's best economist, a very insightful discussion. I appreciate it. And Michael's the author of Killing the Host, How Financial Parasites and Debt Bondage Destroy the Global Economy. Nice to have you with us today, Michael.
It was a really wonderful discussion, Gary.
I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.